it just is a real success story, I think, in terms of what can happen when a not-for-profit and a organization like Hansen can come together with an idea and bring it to reality.
Grow Hayes's co-working space, Brief Spaces, getting ready for a 5-year anniversary celebration. Executive Director Doug Williams comes by to share all the details on this episode of the Post Podcast.
August 9th, 5 years. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we thought this would might be a good time to talk a little bit about, we talk about the facility itself quite a bit, but maybe kind of recap and look back at those 5 years. And I want to start with this. What have you learned any lessons? Have you learned anything about the Hayes workforce by having this facility downtown?
Well, I think one thing we've learned is that there is a demand for the type of space that this provides. We get lots and lots of people using the space for a variety of reasons, whether it's their office away from home, whether they're passing through and need a place to make a conference call or office for a day or two, or if somebody needs meeting rooms and facilities with audio visual aids and that type of thing. So it fills a very important niche in the community in terms of space that wouldn't be available otherwise. So, you know, I've certainly learned that it is it's an asset to the community, and thanks to the generosity of the Hansen Foundation, who made the initial grant that allowed the space to be converted to a co-working space. We have a terrific space that serves the community very well.
Do you think we could use even more co-working space, whether it be an organization like Grow Hayes take it on or a commercial venture?
I think that we could use more space that had private offices. We only have like one or maybe two private offices in the facility, and that's the most common thing that we get asked is, do you have a private office with a door that I can shut and be completely private? We have some cubicle-type setups with, if you haven't been there before, we have some cubicles that have semi-private spaces, but they're not lockable, or at least most of them aren't lockable and things. And so if we had one thing that I think we could use more of, it would be that type of space, a private office space where somebody could just rent an office. They have the space, they have access to the meeting rooms, to the high-speed internet, and to all the other things that they might need. But a private setup would be the one thing that I think we may be able to need. Now, whether you could do that on an economic basis and make it feasible is a whole nother story, because our facility, it works in large part because it was donated with dollars. It was constructed with dollars that you don't have to pay back. If you were to go out and buy space and then try and make a business out of it, that might be a little bit of an uphill battle.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's one of the things that I think probably helps you guys keep your cost to the to your clients so low, is that initial grant and that support as a nonprofit.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't have any debt to service on the facility. We do have to pay property tax. We do have to pay utilities, obviously, and those type of things, insurance. But we have to clean the place. But we don't have that debt to service and that have to get that return on the investment. And that makes a huge difference. So it does a great job of providing a resource for the community. It provides us office space from which to operate. And since we're there, we can manage the facility. And so it just is a real success story, I think, in terms of what can happen when a not-for-profit and a organization like Hansen can come together with an idea and bring it to reality. And that really goes back to my predecessor, Aaron White, and local guy Tim Spino had the idea. They kind of put the thing together. Tim kind of kicked it off, and then he hooked up with Aaron, and they went to the Hansen Foundation and were able to get the dollars to really do it right.
You know, I want to expand out a little bit and think about these co-working spaces in other cities. I've seen, I believe Phillipsburg opened one, or Plainville, one of the two, opened one pretty recently. It seems like they're having a little success. Do you see these becoming more valuable just in general across Western Kansas?
Well, I do, because as we have more and more remote workers, this gives them a kind of this hybrid. They don't have to be at home. Some people can work at home effectively. Some people can't work at home very well at all. You know, they get distracted. There's laundry to do, or there's the lawn to mow, or whatever, and they can't work at home very effectively. And this is kind of a hybrid, and really the best of all worlds. It gives them a space where they have all the resources they need, and actually a lot more than they would normally have, because they do have access to meeting rooms and 1 gigabyte internet access and audio visual aids that they would never have in just a private office someplace else. But it gets them out of the house. So I think that's the role that's being filled in some small communities, because there are remote workers in all communities now. And so I think it's important that a community has a facility like this to offer that remote workforce, or that workforce that just needs something a little bit, a step up from what they might have in a home office.
You know, I wonder if you want to talk about, you know, in the last 5 years, have you seen any positive outcomes? I'm trying to think of a better word, but, you know, basically anybody in the community that has taken advantage of this kind of a setup to score a big win.
Well, I don't know that I can isolate one particular instance that says they came here and because they started here, they started Microsoft or something like that.
It has only been 5 years.
So yeah,
maybe
well,
we
true.
Have a little time.
But I can say that there have, you know, we've had a ton of people go through the facility and come and go. Some have come and stayed. And so I think it fits certain niches. And we've had some that come there and just, this isn't for me. And they either go back home or they go into a private office space. We had one company that was operating there and they kind of outgrew the space and moved out into a private space. And so we've had a little bit of each. We've had one real estate company that sold their building and downsized into our space. And I think it suits them terrifically. So it just depends on the situation. But I think overall, the experience has been very positive for almost all of the users there, and it continues to be a place that fits a specific need in the community.
Excellent. Before we move on to another topic, you do again have that celebration coming up August 9th, 9 a.m., right?
August 9th, 9 a.m. That's actually National Coworking Day. So, you know, there's a day for everything anymore, and that's National Coworking Day. We are going to have a BRICS presentation at 9 a.m., donuts and coffee. And then also, we're going to let anybody that wants to come down and work for free for the day if they just want to get a feel for what's there. So hope to have a big crowd. And if you are looking to try the place out, take it for a test run, we welcome everybody to come on down.
Very good. You know, talking about this kind of co-working environment, I think you've got a quick update we want to hit on from the Micro Factory, right?
We do. If you've been out by there, still have not gone vertical with construction yet, but they're pouring the foundation as we speak. They started, I believe, earlier this week, and it's 30,000 square feet of concrete that has to be poured and worked. And so that takes a while, but they're hopefully going to finish that up this week or early next week. And then after a week or so of curing, they'll start putting the building up and we'll start seeing vertical construction, which is always the exciting part. You know, until things go vertical, it just looks like something going on top of a lot. But once it starts going vertical, you can start getting a real feel for what's going to be there and what it's going to look like. And so we're getting close to that point. So in the next couple of weeks, we'll see some dramatic change out there.
Love to hear that. You know, you talk about the exciting bit, the upward construction, but, you know, even before they're turning any dirt, there's a lot of planning and stuff that has to happen. And I want to talk a little bit about the Grove, because you've got some stuff coming up in that project as well, in those kind of initial planning stages, right?
We do, and you're exactly right. So much has to happen before you actually start coming up out of the ground with construction. On the Grove, as an example, we will be before the Planning Commission this month with annexation, platting, and zoning applications. That's been a long time coming, but we had to acquire the land, get it surveyed, work through some of the bumps in the road that you run into on these things, but we're getting towards the end of that. If assuming the Planning Commission moves it on after we make, they review our application, then in September, the City Commission would approve it. And then you start with the engineering of streets and sewer and water and electric and gas and all those kind of things. So that's another several month process. And then you go out to bid for these infrastructure construction and it's awarded and then you start the construction. So it is a long process, but it's just those, that's the way it works. You got to do that. And we're just diligently moving forward, sometimes not as fast as we would like, but always trying to get to the end we're trying to get to.
Are we at a point now where we could say, you know, we're hoping construction begins, you know, fall 2025 or whatnot?
Well, I much sooner than that, we're hoping construction could begin in spring of 2024 because we'd like to get the engineering done in the next 120 days. And let bids over the winter so that we could hit the ground running in the spring and construction could start on streets and all the infrastructure in the spring of 2024, complete sometime, at least parts of it, in the summer of 2024.
Okay. So we would have people moving into homes maybe even early 2025?
Perhaps. I'm always the eternal optimist, but, you know, perhaps I'd love to think that could be the case. And there are a couple areas that we can go faster on than the others because, as an example, the corner of 27th and Canterbury, all the infrastructure, the street infrastructure and that kind of thing is already there. So that's where there's going to be some apartments and we could start construction on those much sooner than we could waiting on other streets.
You know, I wonder, you know, you mentioned the infrastructure bit. With that planning already there, is there any concern with like extra traffic in that area? And I'm thinking about the with the high school construction, the roundabout that they just put in there down the road at 27th. Is there any concern there or do you guys have that kind of well thought out?
Oh, James, well thought out would never be in our in our bailiwick. But I don't think it'll add that much more construction or more traffic. Certainly it adds some. We'll have entrances off of Canterbury. We'll have entrances off of 27th Street. So at certain times of the day, when the high school lets out or when Hayes Med has a shift change or whatever, certainly there's going to be a lot of traffic. There is a lot of traffic, and this will add a little bit to that. But I think the infrastructure is there to deal with that. At some point in time, I'm sure that the city will have to look at 27th Street going east of Canterbury and look at some potential improvements there, but that's a number of years away, I'm sure.
And that's always part of the trick, right? It's thinking long-term where you think planning is going to happen, where development's going to happen, and sometimes it matches and sometimes it doesn't, right?
Well, yeah, most of the time it seems like it doesn't. You know, you're always playing catch-up on these things, and I know they're looking at expansion of the road going east of on 13th Street of the high school because they know a lot of traffic's going to route around that way once there's a junior high and a high school there, but you try and anticipate the best you can and do the best you can.
Doug, we're virtually out of time. Any last thoughts or anything else you want to hit on before we go?
Just come down on August 9th to Brief Space at 9 a.m. Join us and come down and work for the day. We would love to see everybody.